We would like to welcome you to the October 11th, 2023 meeting of the Savannah Historic District Board of Review. The purpose of this board is to promote the educational, cultural, economic, and general welfare of the city of Savannah. This board is appointed by City Council and is not affiliated with any for-profit or nonprofit organization. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards established in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance are the basis for evaluating the compatibility of changes and new development. The board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as landscaping, parking availability, traffic, noise, and impact on property values are not within the board's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a certificate of appropriateness. Similarly, personal preferences will not be the basis for a decision. At this time, please make sure that your cell phones are muted. And if you're joining us virtually, please make sure you're muted on there as well so that we can have a clear record. Signpostings. Members of the board receive packages containing applications in the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were there any projects that were not posted this month? Okay. Hearing none, we'll move on to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. Bear with me as I read through all nine items on the consent agenda. The petition of Hanson Architects 23-004290-COA, 226 West Broughton Street alterations. The petition of Array Design 23-004345-COA, 412 East Gwinnett Street after the fact fence. The petition of Metal Crafts 23-004010-COA, 574 Indian Street roof recovering. The petition of William H. Triplett, 23-004855-COA, 428 Price Street Rehabilitation. The petition of Principles of Design, 23-004376-COA, 124 East Bay Street Rehabilitation and Alterations. The petition of Ethos Preservation, 23-004867-COA, 112 West Taylor Street Rehabilitation and Alterations. The petition of Architecture 101, 23-004856-COA, 431 Habersham Street, Amendment to Porch Addition. The petition of Eli Laurie, 23-004870-COA, 24 West Taylor Street, Alterations. And lastly, the petition of Principles of Design, 23-004038-COA, 115 East River Street, Sign. Is there a member of the public or any board member who wishes to remove an item from the consent agenda to the regular agenda? Okay. Hearing none, is there a motion for approval of the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. With that, the items that have been posted on the regular or that were placed on the consent agenda have been approved. You are welcome to stay or leave as you wish. Adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion for the approval of today's agenda?
Thompson, move we approve today's agenda.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Minutes from the previous month's meeting are attached to the agenda. Is there a motion to approve last month's meeting minutes?
Thompson, I have a quick question on this. The minutes just got put on today or yesterday?
Yesterday.
Okay, I didn't see it till I updated, but okay.
Yeah.
I move the Historic Savannah Board of Review approve the minutes of September 13th, 2023.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. There are no items that were requested to be removed from the final agenda, so we'll move on to the continued agenda. These applications have been requested to be removed from the following meeting. We have four. The petition of Otaco Affair, 23-003629-COA, 401 West Hall Street Sign. The petition of JDH Decks and Fences Incorporated, 23-003664-COA, 20 East Broad Street Fence. The petition of Lomonite Coleman Smith Architects, 23-004075-COA, 541 East Congress Street alterations. The petition of Lomonette Coleman Smith Architects, 23-004230-COA, 208 East Liberty Street, new construction, accessory building, part one, height and mass. Is there a motion to continue the items on the continued agenda?
Gwen, so moved.
Thank you, Ms. Gwen. Do I have a second?
Becker, second.
Thank you, Mr. Becker. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Moving on, there were no items requested to have an extension this month, so we will move on to the regular agenda. Staff will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to the recommendations. We ask that the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance and questions raised by this board. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to those public comments. The board will then go into board discussion, at which no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairwoman. We will structure board discussion by going around to each board member two times for comments. You do not have to provide comments if you do not have any. If you are joining us virtually for the first time, please locate your control panel. Anybody virtually that wishes to submit a comment, use the raise your hand feature and I will be notified and call on you by name. If you are doing it in person, just come up one at a time. Make sure you sign in and state your name for the record. The first item on the regular agenda is the petition of Shed Architecture 23-0032-COA, 412 to 414 Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, non-contributing demolition.
Sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the board. The applicant is requesting approval to demolish the non-contributing buildings at 412 and 414 Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. It says a project history recap: on July 12th, this request was first heard at the HDBR meeting where the board decision was to continue the request to allow time for the applicant to provide information such as structural reports and photographs, and for staff to reevaluate whether these buildings qualify for contributing status. For the following meeting on August 9th, the applicant provided the requested information, including structural reports for 414 MLK Boulevard and interior images of 412. A letter from a descendant of the family who owned the building stated that the property was not involved in the civil rights movement. Staff research included further archival searches that did not uncover further information linking these sites to the civil rights movement. Further information was provided by the applicant, including interior photos of 412. The petitioner also included a presentation by Repurposed Savannah detailing their work in general, but also a specific plan for how the two buildings could be deconstructed. After board discussion, the HDBR decision was to continue the request to the September 13th, 2023 meeting. The applicant reached out to MPC staff with a request to continue until today's meeting. On August 21st, 2023, a structural analysis of 412 Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard was provided or was undertaken by F. Michael Sykes, a structural engineer. The report is now included in the submittal packet and has been incorporated into the staff report. The findings by Mr. Sykes indicated that the lack of capacity the existing building framing systems have, it is his professional opinion that this building should be demolished and rebuilt. With the new information from the structural report at 412 MLK recommending that the building is demolished and rebuilt, the staff recommendation remains the same with the overall stance that the buildings have lost a great deal of their integrity due to multiple alterations that they have undergone. The design, setting, materials, and workmanship of the original buildings is no longer there. The criteria that's evaluated by does deal directly with the resources themselves, but it appears that various materials in both buildings could be salvaged, and the applicant has proposed to use the services of Repurposed Savannah to accomplish this. With consideration of the contributing building criteria and the information provided in the structural reports and photographs, the staff recommendation is to approve the request for demolition of the non-contributing buildings located at 412, 414, Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard with the following conditions because the criteria for non-contributing demolition have otherwise been met. One, the buildings must be documented per the MPC policy for documenting buildings. Two, rather than traditional demolition, the building be deconstructed and the materials salvaged for reuse. Thank you.
Thank you, Caitlin. Does anybody have any questions for staff? We talked about this one quite a bit during pre.
I just have one. Do you have any idea, maybe this was in the paperwork and I missed it, but when the alterations occurred on these buildings, do we have any idea? Were you able to narrow it down based on these photos?
I mean, I think based on just some of what the Sanborn maps showed in the earlier 1888, 1898, when we're still seeing different structures there, the first kind of change happened by the 1916. But it just seems like over time, just by some of these, you can already see how these townhouses were a portion of this.
Yeah. Do you know when that particular, the top right historic photograph, it says, with the loan company? Do you have any idea what date that is?
They were dated to the 1930s. Some of these are undated.
Is it possible that these buildings, I know they've been significantly altered, but could have some significance because of their alteration over time if they were properly restored to that period of time? Like the 30s or 40s?
I don't know that they could be, but like this just doesn't exist anymore. There's some fabric that certainly still is inside, but I don't know that could feasibly be done. But
do you have any other questions, Nan? Okay, go ahead, Mr. Higgins.
A couple of things. Can you tell me a little bit more of staff's interpretation of the standards for deciding that something is a contributing building or not, specifically are associated with events that have made significant contribution to the broad patterns of our history. Because I know staff states that there were no specific events attributable to these buildings, but does it say specific events?
So the way that the criteria is set up to determine something that's non-contributing to contributing, what's going to happen is there's kind of two categories within it. There's criteria that do say what you just mentioned, and nobody, we aren't denying there's definitely history with this area. However, with these criteria, there's another one, which is exceptional importance, which says contributing buildings include a select group of exceptional resources constructed outside the district's period of significance. These resources, so definitely the buildings, possess integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association, and meet one of the above criteria, which is included in that. But staff just found that the integrity is lost, and that was the determining factor based on the criteria on contributing or non.
With regard to some of that, I don't remember exactly which photographs they are, but there are photographs of the interior showing historic window openings and moldings. Does staff have any feelings as to what historic fabric may still be existing under the stucco? And also, since the canopy went down and the historic transoms from the very early photograph are now showing as still being there, has that affected your view?
It has not. But that is a basis for the reason of deconstructing rather than demolition.
Any other comments or questions? Okay. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the board, Shedrick Coleman, Shed Architecture. We totally agree with staff recommendation and research on this project. It's been a long process of going back and forth and looking to try and make sure that the assessment of these buildings was accurate based on the recent few months, as well as the historical record of these buildings being reviewed for the last 57 years. So at this stage, we are in agreement and have no points to add to this at this time. If there are any questions, we'd be happy to take them on.
Does anybody have any questions for the petitioner?
Yes. At the last hearing, it was mentioned that these buildings have been reviewed, I think it was 10 or 12 times for contributing status. Can you cite those reviews?
I cannot cite those reviews because they were not undertaken by me, and they historically have been done by others, so I can't cite those. They would be in another historical record that have been maintained by the MPC's office, I'm sure, but we don't have that information, no.
Where did you get the number?
I didn't state 10. I don't know where you saying I stated it, because I've never said 10 times personally, so I don't know where that came from.
Any other additional questions?
I've got a question about the structural report. You said at one point, or whoever did the structural report, stated that it was on the third floor framing is overstressed. They came up with a figure of 44% by 44%. Do you know where they came up with that figure? And also, going on further, it says that it poses immediate concern. What does immediate concern mean?
Which of the two reports? We have two reports.
Yeah,
are you talking 414
the most 412? Recent? 412, the most recent one.
That would be the recommendation from my engineer who visited the building and took a look at it. We went through the building, looked at the structural systems that were there, looked at what would be the possible reuses of the building, which would require an update to the structural system of the building. And when he did his calculations based on what the existing structural loads are versus what would be required, that's where he would have come up with any difference in what he considered the structural capability of the building would be.
Okay, so that's where he somehow came up with 44% is, all
that,
right?
That would be where I'm figuring he based
and
that from.
What does he mean by immediate concern?
That I do not know. That he hasn't put that specifically in the report, so I don't know. There's no immediate concern to me to that building. It's not structurally unsound right now, so immediate concern for me is not the structure of this building now. It's the future use of the building that would be of issue structurally.
So it's really future concern, not immediate concern.
Yes, it's okay. Future concern, yes.
Okay.
So can you... Just to reiterate, so there is no immediate structural concern with regard to 412?
That was stated before that based on that building, if you did nothing else to it and did not try and reuse it or anything, the building's structurally sound. The building is not structurally sound for continued use for new uses where we would have to upgrade the structural system for the building. That's where the difference comes in.
So it was evaluated based on like a future impending use versus...
Exactly. That's where the difference in stating that the building's structurally sound as it stands. It's not in danger of falling as it is.
Okay. Use.
Basically, any commercial or new residential uses would actually stress that building now based on new codes.
Anything else?
Yeah, one last question. Mm-hmm. So it would stress the wood framing. Mm-hmm. Not the building itself. Is that correct?
Well, the 212 is only 24 feet wide, and it's all wood framing in between masonry walls. So that is the structure. So that's a major component of the building. None of that would be able to support anything. So that's considered pretty major.
Because they share the masonry walls with the next door. Yeah. Any other questions for the petitioner? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Make sure you state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Ryan Jarles, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. We did speak on this project previously, as I'm sure you remember, and we have not varied from that previous statement, so I'll be brief. We obviously don't ever support demolition of historic buildings, but we do understand certain circumstances which would require that. And we do agree with staff's representation of integrity in this case. Most of it has been lost to this building. There are interior features. However, this is a district, so we all understand that we're only supposed to look at the exterior features of this building. And in that case, we do feel there the exterior integrity is not there. And so that's all we have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else from the public? Anybody virtually?
No, ma'am.
Okie dokie. Would the petitioner like to respond to public comments at all?
Again, Shedrick Coleman, we would just like to thank Historic Savannah for their efforts in reviewing the building with us and for their commentary. Thank you.
Okay. At this time, we'll now enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be accepted. Mr. Becker, I'll start with you.
I have no comment.
Okay, Ms. Gwynn.
This is a challenging one, I think, for many reasons. I think anytime we're talking about demolishing a building within the district, it needs to be thoroughly investigated and examined. Having had a chance to review the structural reports from the engineers, while I think it's very unfortunate what has happened to this building over the years, I think the result is in a building that is would be very difficult at best to be saved, and I'm not sure exactly at this point what we're saving. But it does give me a little bit of comfort that they have gone out of their way to engage in a local company that specializes in salvaging materials that can be salvaged to at least preserve that part of history.
Mr. Higgins?
Couple of things. First of all, I strongly feel that the criteria for these being contributing structures mm-hmm. is not, I feel there, it's an error that they're found to be non-contributing buildings. Mm-hmm. This area was extremely important socially, economically to the African American community through the Jim Crow era. We've lost significant parts of this because of the flyover. And what little is left, we should at all possible costs try to save. We have two separate buildings here. 412 is found to be structurally sound, but not for a proposed use. Having dealt with masonry buildings before, there are interior structures that can be had if the building itself is structurally sound. And this has been found to be, the four outside walls have been found to be structurally sound. As far as the 414 building, it has been muddled over the years severely. We all realize that. But as little bits of the onion skin are being pulled back, we keep seeing more and more of the historic fabric. When you're inside and you see historic moldings and intact windows, when you see the outlines of windows in that stucco, I think we are erring in thinking that it is all gone. It is not all gone. There have been many projects where buildings like this have been stripped of the muddling and rebuilt. One that comes to mind is the Mate Factor building over by Kroger, which was literally taken down to its exterior framing and rebuilt. I know in projects I've worked on, we have taken buildings to the four exterior walls and rebuilt inside. To lose these buildings, I think, is criminal. I'll end it with that.
Very well said. Mr. Thompson.
I appreciate the comments that are being made about the situation, but I am in favor of recommending staff's recommendation.
Ms. Taylor.
I agree with Mr. Higgins that I don't think demolitions can be taken lightly. especially in the current situation we are with the landmark district being threatened. I think the problem is that we have a building 414 that probably has less integrity and less structural support than 412, and yet we cannot separate them. We've asked and we've been told that these two have to be voted on together, and I think that's a shame because I think there's some options there. I also I do think there is something historically, culturally significant still left of both of these buildings and the location that they're in. And I'm not 100% sold that that there isn't something that can be done to recreate some of the architectural integrity that was altered sometime possibly in the 30s, 40s, even 50s. You know, buildings do alter over time. They do change over time. And they can be altered back to that period of time as far as removing possibly some of the elements that were put on in the 70s and 80s. You know, I think we could, there's a possibility that some of this could be recreated. I guess the fact that there's not an immediate concern of the structures, the structure particularly for 412, is another factor. If this was falling down and posed a threat to the community, then that would be a different situation too. So there's a lot here, and those are my concerns.
Okay, we'll go around a second time. Mr. Becker.
No comment.
Ms. Quinn.
Nothing further.
Mr. Higgins.
Just I echo Nan's comments.
Mr. Thompson.
No additional comments.
Okay, and Ms. Taylor. Okay. This time, we will now entertain a motion.
Not very good at this, Coach.
Do your best.
The Savannah Historic District Board, the motion is to approve the request for demolition of the non-contributing buildings 412 to 414 MLK, including the 2 points that staff has made regarding the documenting the building and having deconstructed versus traditional demolition. Did I get all the parts in there?
I think you did. Do I have a second?
Gwen, second.
Okay. So the current motion on the floor is to approve the request for demolition for the non-contributing buildings with the two recommendations as listed in the staff report. Mr. Becker, how do you vote?
No.
Ms. Gwen?
Yay.
Mr. Higgins?
No.
Mr. Thompson?
Yes.
And Ms. Taylor?
No.
Okay. With that, the motion fails. So I need a new motion.
Higgins?
Yes.
I move with the Historic District Board of Review with regard to 23-003202 COA 412-414 MLK deny the request for demolition of a non-contributing buildings located at 412-14 Martin Luther King Boulevard.
What reasoning?
Because the criteria for non-contributing demolition has not been met.
Yeah, I need you to be more specific.
The buildings are structurally sound. 412 has not been shown to be structurally unsound, and 414 has not been shown to not meet the criteria for non-contributing buildings.
I need you to.
As part of the audience, you can't speak out. You'd have to come to the podium and the board would have to recognize you. Thank you.
So let me ask, based on his motion that was just made, is that enough reasoning?
If that's the reasoning of this board, then that's what we would go with. It just has to ensure that we're looking at the ordinance and complying with the ordinance.
Okay. Do I have a second for that motion?
Second.
Okay. So the new motion on the table is to deny due to the criteria not being met, 412 being structurally sound and the criteria for to become a contributing building has not been met. Seconded by Ms. Taylor. Mr. Becker, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Gwynn?
No.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
No.
And Ms. Taylor?
Aye.
Okay. With that, the motion passes to deny the application. The next item on the regular agenda is the petition of Wakely Properties, LLC, 23-004866-COA, 520 East Oglethorpe Avenue, New Construction Part 1, height and mass.
All right, thank you. This is Caitlin again. The applicant is requesting approval for new construction part one height and mass for the property located at 520 East Oglethorpe Avenue. The plan is to construct a two-story commercial restaurant building. The current building on the site is a non-contributing resource approved for demolition with a current address of 143 Houston Street. Before we go any further, I will show you that the petitioner provided an excellent model, so I'll pass that around.
Thank you. I love you for passing this around to us. Right.
Okay, so 520 East Oglethorpe Avenue is the new address of the current 143 Houston Street. 143 Houston Street was built in 1976 and is a non-contributing building within the Savannah National Historic Landmark District and the local Savannah Downtown Historic District. There are a mix of contributing residential and commercial resources in the vicinity of the property, along with several non-contributing buildings as well. Just to have, or this is the submittal packet that's provided just some different aerial views of the vicinity with of the site. Houston Street is currently vacant due to the fact that it was deemed structurally unsound. The applicant stated that the CMU blocks, wood frame members, ceiling joists, and rafters will be salvaged and reused. This non-contributing demolition of this property was approved by the Historic District Board of Review on June 14th, 2023. I will just go over the elevation drawings. This would be the front-facing Oglethorpe. This is facing Houston. And the rear on the lane and the side facing the houses. Here is some contextual street views to also. There. Overall, staff found the height and mass are visually compatible and meet the standards. There were minor details such as window inset measurements that staff requests to be shown in part two design details. With regard to the building form, the form matches several rectangular two-story contributing buildings within Green Ward, though the aforementioned contributing buildings are residential and the proposed new construction is commercial. The form meets the standard for a proposed building on an east-west through street. For the storefront glazing, staff requests more information to ensure that 55% of the house and street facade has glazing on at least 55% of the surface area. And then just, they also provided the photos of the model too, just for more context. So with that, staff recommends to approve new construction part one height and mass for the property located at 520 Oglethorpe Avenue with the following conditions to be submitted to the board for review with part two design details because the project is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards for height and mass. One, provide details showing that the door frames, window sashes, and window sashes will be inset not less than 3 inches from the exterior surface of the facade of the building. Provide details showing that the storefront glazing is inset at least 4 inches from the facade of the building and provide information regarding the percentage of storefront glazing on the house and street facade. Ensure it covers a minimum of 55% surface area. Thank you.
Thank you, Caitlin. Does anybody have any questions for staff?
I have one question. Were there any comments from the public on this?
We received.
So could you read it?
Okay. Yeah, so we received a comment on Friday after the preliminary agenda went out. The questions were regarding waste management. While the proposed design effectively conceals the building's dumpster from Houston Street, there appears to be an oversight regarding its visibility from York Lane. Is disconcerting. There's no clear plan outline for a comprehensive enclosure. Two, exhaust system, saying they hope the petitioner will reconsider the placement of the rooftop exhaust and mechanical systems, ideally relocating them closer to the house in Oglethorpe intersection. And York Lane infrastructure, is the petitioner collaborating with the city to address the lack of paving and drainage for York Lane?
Any other questions for staff? Thank you. Would the petitioner like to come forward? Make sure you state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Christina Swenson, and I'm the architect on this project. And I will gladly to answer any questions you have.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions for the petitioner? Go ahead, Neil.
I have a few. We just read a few comments that were from a concerned resident. Mm-hmm. Could you address each one of those?
Yes. Actually, those are part of my next submittal for the following month. I think the comment about the pavers or in the back, I don't have the comments in front of me, so I'm not exactly sure.
The lane infrastructure?
Yeah. Here's about the waste management. We are going to have a dumpster. We just haven't put the location of it yet. And again, I'm working on the design part for next month's submittal, and we will have enclosure for that. I just haven't addressed it in this submittal.
Right.
Because I'm here for height and mass.
Right.
As far as the exhaust system, they will be on the roof. We did look at different locations, and I do not agree that it should go towards Oglethorpe and Houston, as these two are frontage streets. Mm-hmm. And we held it to the back towards the lane. I mean, all these residences already have their waste garbage cans in the lane. And we are not building on zero lot line in the back, so we have enough room. I mean, from the site, the rooftop is not very visible. Mm-hmm. And I understand maybe the house behind us has, since they are at over 20 feet in height, they might have a better view of the mechanical equipment. But we do have screens going up there to hide all of that.
Which again will be addressed in
which
next
I already have on the next set. Yes.
And
then as far as the drainage, we are putting pavers, impervious pavers in the back, and that remaining 15 feet from the edge of the building to our site line.
Okay. Did you have anything additional, Mr. Becker? Ms. Taylor? Mike.
My questions had to do with part two.
Okay. So, does anybody else have any questions for the petitioner? Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment on this project? Go ahead, Ms. Woods. I'll get you next.
Artist Wood, I would like to know, will there be a tree lawn on both streets, and how wide will that be, and how wide will the sidewalk be?
Okay. Oh, make sure you state your name for the record real fast before she comes back up.
Oh, Artist Wood.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, what was your first part of your question?
I want to know about the border of the land that is the width of the tree lawn, and will you have one?
Yeah, it's staying as is as of now. We're going to protect all the existing trees and keep the sidewalk. We're just going to...
Okay, on both sides.
I'm going to let other members of the public do their questions, and then you can address them all at the end. Okay, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Steve Lieberman. And first of all, we just do welcome the addition to the neighborhood. The abandoned buildings have been there forever. It's great to get something new. There are a number of neighbors here. And we're neighbors. In terms of the waste management, we do really think an enclosure, drainage, and all that needs to be provided. A dumpster out back, we think it's just going to cause problems with the residences. In terms of the exhaust, we would like it screened, but also we understand it may be a steakhouse, so maybe a grease scrubber, or some kind of system to eliminate some odors back to the houses. And in terms of the lane, we do have a dirt lane back there. And ostensibly, I think there'll be trucks and all kinds of things moving through there. So that's why we wanted addressed about possible paving or drainage for the lane itself.
Okay. Any other additional public comments?
Hi, my name is George Mack. I live on Price Street, and the north side of my house is on York Lane. What about parking for this? Are there any provisions being made for parking? Are people going to be parking all on just the street? Or
our purview doesn't cover parking.
Uh-huh. Well, then.
So, sorry.
And what about drainage? The York Lane goes down from east to west, mm-hmm. and so all drainage goes down that dirt toward my house. There are no provisions for paving York Lane or doing something that would provide for no extra whatever coming from the restaurant. But also I want to say we certainly do welcome the restaurant. That's it.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody additional from the public? Anybody virtually?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Does staff maybe want to address some of those questions about like what we're technically allowed to have in our purview, or where they need to take some of those other concerns about the lane?
I mean, that's all covered with the city's site plan review process. There's not a public process for that. I know that they will be required to at least pave the lane for their portion of the project. That's a requirement for every project now that affects a lane. Parking, I think this must be a parking exempt zone.
Okay.
But the applicant might be able to answer some of these questions too.
Okay.
So
I just figured I'd let you do it first before I had her.
I think that's about all I know the answers to.
Okay. Would the petitioner like to respond?
Again, my name is Christina Swenson. We are addressing the waste management, but again, that's next submittal in November, since it is part of the design and not the height and the mass of the building. We are going to address the drainage system and underground grease trap and all that stuff. All this is being worked on. As far as the parking, even though it's not your purview, we have addressed the parking, and we are in a 40% reduction zone. Where we are, and I think we're only required 30 spaces for the occupant load that we have now. Within 500 feet of the building, there is off-street parking and on-street parking. I know the owner, the future owners of this building plan on talking to the dialysis center and Sheehan if we have to use their parking lots after hours and accommodate for that.
I think it might be helpful if you talk to some of the community members before you leave today.
Okay.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So at this time, we'll now enter into board discussion. Ms. Taylor, I'll start with you.
I agree with staff's comments. Nothing further.
Okay, Mr. Thompson.
I agree with staff's recommendation.
Okay, Mr. Higgins.
No comment.
Ms. Quinn.
I agree with the comments from staff, and I echo your recommendation. I always think that you end up with a better product and happier neighbors when you set up a forum or a feedback session to take into account some of the concerns that have been raised.
Mr. Becker.
I think it's a great project and in favor of it, especially for phase one or part one. And I'll have other comments for part two when submitted.
Okay. I'll go around one more time just to make sure nobody has any comments. Mr. Taylor.
Nothing else.
Mr. Thompson.
Just to help me with visualization, is this near the huge project that's going on between Price and Habersham?
The apartment building?
Yeah, it's really close to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, no other comment.
Mr. Higgins?
No comment.
Ms. Quinn?
Nothing further.
And Mr. Becker?
Nothing further.
Okay, at this time, I will now entertain a motion.
I'll go ahead and do it. I move that the Savannah Historic Board of Review approve petition number 23-004866 COA 520 East Oglethorpe Avenue, new construction part one, height and mass, provided that the conditions, the following conditions to be submitted, including the conditions as outlined in the staff recommendation are met, the three conditions.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Thompson, second.
Okay. Okay. Current motion on the floor is to approve as submitted with the conditions provided by staff. Ms. Taylor, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Ms. Gwynn?
Aye.
And Mr. Becker?
Aye.
Okay. With that, the motion has been approved with conditions. The next item on the regular agenda is the petition of Bethany Ralph, 23-004871-COA, 424 Habersham Street, after the fact fence and gate.
Thank you. This is Caitlin again. The applicant is requesting approval of an after the fact fence installation and also construction of two brick columns to support a set of antique wooden gates for the property at 424 Habersham Street. Just for some context of the surrounding area, the house was built in 1896 and is a contributing resource. There's a two-story wood-framed house on a truss lot facing Whitfield Square. There's a very similar house directly next door on the truss lot, 426 Habersham Street. There are several other wood-framed structures in the vicinity. The applicant made an in-kind fence repair or replacement without a COA based on Google Street View photos between 2012 and 2022. This can be verified that the new fence was placed in the same location as the old one. So we'll go over that briefly. So these are the older photos from 2014 and 2022. And this is what we see today. In the older photos, there's a small storage shed built in the same plane as the fence. It's highly overgrown with vines, but there's concrete block beneath the foliage. Where there had been a shingle roof, it looks like the applicant added some height using the same material as the fence and added a corrugated metal roof. The majority of this is behind the fence. The applicant has a variety of elements proposed to be added to this project, including brick columns and two antique wooden gates. Included with the work is the addition of two stone griffins to be placed atop the brick columns and an antique fountain that will be visible through the gates. These decorative elements are not typically reviewed, but in order to provide the full project scope, it is mentioned here. This is also the neighbor across the street. Staff found that the fence, brick columns, and gates could all be removed in the future without affecting the historic building, and the project elements do not physically affect the building in a way that would negatively impact the building materials. Regarding the visual compatibility details, it's unclear whether the height of the fence, brick columns, and gates are visually compatible with how they interact with each other, because a scale dimension elevation drawing was not provided. The sketch that the applicant provided does show some measurements, but it is not to scale, and from on-site observation, staff noticed the gates are considerably shorter than the fence. It is possible that the brick columns would be a height in between the fence and the gates to even out the dramatic difference in height. Staff recommends the applicant provides this scale dimension drawing to clarify. With regard to the relationship of a wood fence and wood gates with a set of brick columns, since the historic house is a wood frame house with a brick foundation, the combination of these materials is visually compatible with the building. Staff recommends that the applicant use a brick type like the house's foundation in order to remain visually compatible, though the applicant noted the use of reclaimed brick, a sample wasn't provided. The paint on the gates is worn away in various parts, but the beige color of the main parts of the gates and the red outlines of the gate panels would be visually compatible with the light colored wood of the fence and the brick. The fence will also be stained. There are fence standards that state fences can't extend beyond the facade of the building, and there must be 5 feet between a fence and a building where they are parallel. The standards in question were existing conditions for the property, and upon staff inspection, it appears that the applicant placed the fence within the same area that the earlier fence had been. Staff noticed on site that the reasoning for the placement of the older fence was likely to stay aligned with the end of the house, where if it were moved back from the neighboring building facade, this portion of the fence would actually end up at the center of the rear porch and balcony. Which kind of, you can see on these corners here, it would kind of just go right there. There is also not 5 feet between the properties where the fence is parallel. So staff recommends to approve the after-the-fact fence installation and the proposed installation of brick columns and antique wood gates with the following conditions, because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. One, provide a scaled dimension drawing to clarify the height of each element, and provide a brick sample that shows it will closely match the brick pier foundation of the house. Thank you.
Thank you, Caitlin. Does anybody have any questions for staff? Okay, thank you. Would the petitioner like to come forward? Make sure you state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, I'm Bethany Ralph, and thank you very much for reviewing my application and for your insightful comments. Would you like me to address the specific points that you raised in your,
sure,
your letter? So regarding the height of the gate, I'm aware that it's shorter. It's actually 7 inches shorter. It looks much shorter in the pictures, but the fence ended up being, the existing fence was 6 feet, but it was not installed properly. And if you see from the Google pictures from the previously existing fence, the side on Price Street didn't align with the side on Taylor Street.
Okay.
So, I had the fence built twice, the new fence. The old fence was falling down. It was almost a hazard. And, I had it built initially, and the carpenter followed the slope of the land, which was sloped down towards Taylor Street, mm-hmm. and that made the fence not align with the clapboards on 415 East Taylor Street, which was troublesome to me. So we leveled out, so it ended up that the fence was 6 feet, 7 inches on Taylor Street.
Okay.
The shed actually is the same height. It's all the same, except that the previous owner was an artist and was creative and used materials creatively. So where the boards are now on top of the cement blocks. I don't know what was there, but it was all rotten. But it's the same height, and the previously existing roof on the shed was just black asphalt, which had nothing to do with the house. So I used the metal roofing material that's on the steamboat porch. Mm-hmm. It's the same material.
Okay.
So regarding the height of the gate, I thought that with the addition of a transition between the sidewalk and the patio, that's going to be about an inch, and then the gate has to be about 2 inches off the ground. So that'll take up some of that difference. And then the piers could end up being below where I had the trim placed to cover up the dog ears. The dog ears are under there, and that's 3 inches. So there would only be about a 2-inch discrepancy. I also thought of adding wood to the gates on top or the bottom. If the board has a preference, I'd be happy to hear what you think about that. Regarding the bricks, I had a mason is engaged to do the work for me, and he said the bricks that I plan to use were the same as the ones on the foundation. But here's the thing, the foundation bricks have been painted, not by me, mm-hmm. and the paint is flaking. So in order to make it match, I'd have to paint the bricks on the piers. I don't know if you would like that.
Okay. So you're proposing to paint them now?
Brick is not supposed to be painted. Right. So whatever the board prefers, I'll do. And I see you mentioned scale drawings. Do you mean architectural drawings?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's quite an expense and a project for a relatively minor thing, which I replaced totally inappropriate driveway gates. Mm-hmm. So I would request that you waive that. I mean, I'll be happy to provide the measurements of the gate and the fence.
Does anybody have any questions for the petitioner?
Hello, this is Rob Becker. I do have a couple questions regarding the shed. When was the shed installed, and did you get a permit for that?
The shed has been there. The part that I had to rebuild because it was falling down is on the interior. The exterior walls were cement blocks.
And is that exposed to the street now?
Well, it's covered by vines that were there.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the petitioner?
At any point in the discussions with your contractor, was there discussion about getting a COA?
No, because I thought that I could do in-kind replacements, and the fence is the same. The fence I put is the same as the fence that was there, only it's standing up. I mean, it's a dog-eared fence. I just covered up the dog ears.
Yeah. Any other questions for the petitioner? Okay. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Do I understand correctly then that you are going to adjourn this till next month?
No.
No?
No, we'll make a decision today.
Oh, all right.
Yes,
thank you.
Uh-huh. Is there any member of the public that would like to comment? Anybody virtually? Come on. Just make sure you state your name.
Yes, hello. My name is Andrew Jones. I find this somewhat problematic. Perhaps it would be better to hire a professional to assist with this. The materials don't seem compatible with the materials typical in the Victorian district, in particular a gate imported from India. I mean, it, by its very nature, it has no relationship to the historical materials of the neighborhood. And the fact that it's semi-painted also is very problematic as well. The Griffins at least in the drawing, are indicated as being cement. And cast cement, I also don't think is an appropriate material here. We have some images of griffins from somewhere else, but I'm not sure those are the ones that we're looking at. So if there were stone griffins, we probably should see a picture of those too. If they're not stone, if they are in fact cement, I don't think that you should approve them. You should also just look at this whole conception and just determine whether it's just a little too much for a side yard fence. And those are my comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Do we have any other public comments? I need to wait and see if there's any other comments first, but then you can.
Anything? No, ma'am.
Okay, now you can.
Thank you. The dog-eared fence, I mean, dog-eared fences are all over this historic district. At 422 Price Street, there's a dog-eared fence with the dog ears aren't covered up, but mine is, it's similar to other fences in the whole area. And regarding the cement griffins, the, across the street at 408 East Taylor, as your staff pointed out, there are cement pineapples on brick piers. And I think on Wayne Street, there are a series of piers behind the townhouses that front on East Gordon Street, and there are cement objects on top. The picture, the griffins in the picture that I sent, that I submitted, which is from a book, they're identical to the ones that I own. Mine are in a warehouse and they weigh a lot. I can't really move them around to take pictures of them, but they're the same ones.
Okay. Awesome. At this time, we'll now go into board discussion. Can staff put the recommendations back on? Thank you. Mr. Becker, I will start with you.
I think that one of the things that have concerned me about this project is the fact that it is only a partial fence and we still have this issue with this unresolved shed that if it is not shielded right now and it is considered an accessory structure, which should have been located on the interior portion of the property. So I find that making a decision on just the fence seems to only be a portion of the issues that we have here and that we should look at and consider continuing this to look at the entire issues around this site, including the shed.
Ms. Gwynn?
I know there's nothing that we can do about it, but I would just like it on the record. It's not my favorite when we have to review things after the fact. Mm-hmm. I think it makes it a much more challenging process. I do agree with the staff recommendations. I would probably add a third recommendation on there. I think we need some more detail on these statues that are going to be placed, not just the scaled and dimension drawings.
Agreed. And I feel like the doors need further clarification as well. Mr. Higgins.
I'm going to go contrary to something that you just said, that we might make a decision today, because my view is that this should be continued. We have such an incomplete picture here. And what really bothers me is, and staff even says it, it is unclear whether the height of the fence, brick columns, and gates are visually compatible. This is on Taylor Street. It's a very, very straightforward location. Mm-hmm. And I just feel we have such an incomplete picture of what the finished product is going to be scale-wise, look-wise. I would just as soon continue this till all that could be put together and presented to the staff.
Okay. Mr. Thompson?
Well, I think it probably should be continued too, because sort of put together not an attractive way for that neighborhood. This cold air blowing on me, losing my voice. So I guess I would support a continuation until further work could be done to make this more compatible, I guess visually compatible with the neighborhood.
Okay. Ms. Taylor?
I do agree with what the rest of my colleagues have said. I think it's a little bit piecemeal. I think some of these elements are fine individually, but again, having a kind of a hard time seeing the whole picture together, maybe getting the scaled drawings would help, you know, maybe if we could actually see what the Griffin looks like. So, and how exactly it's going to look, because as we said, the doors look shorter than what they actually are. So it's just that misrepresentation that's a little bit tough to pull together. Also, I'm a little concerned about the bricks. You brought up a good point, you know, on the house that's painted, the bricks you're going to use probably are not. So how different is that? And maybe we need to be looking a little closer at that as well.
We're in board discussion.
These are just some of my concerns off the top, you know, just things that I'm hoping we can address possibly at the next meeting. That's all my comments.
Okay. I'm going to go around a second time. Mr. Becker.
No further comments.
Ms. Gwen.
Nothing further.
Mr. Higgins.
Nothing further.
Mr. Thompson.
Nothing further.
And Ms. Taylor.
Nothing else.
Okay. We will now entertain a motion.
Higgins. I move with the Savannah, the Historic District Board of Review with regard to 23-004871 COA. What's the address?
424 Habersham.
424 Habersham. Continue to the November 8th. Date of the
eighth.
To the November 8th hearing, so that the petitioner may provide scaled dimensional drawings, samples of materials, and photographs of other elements they wish to include.
Okay, so you want to include all of staff's recommendation, but also include a third condition to say provide other material samples and photographs?
Correct.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Mr. Becker, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Gwynn?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
And Ms. Taylor?
Aye.
Okay. With that, the petition has been continued. If you have questions about what that means, you can talk to staff about it. Okay. Next item on the regular agenda is the petition of Lynch Associate Architects, 23-004869-COA, 503 East Bay Street, Factors Walk Addition / Alterations.
Thank you. This is Leah. The applicant is requesting approval to add a platform to Upper Factors Walk near the property located at 503 East Bay Street. The work also includes modifications to the handrail of the existing bridge to which the platform will be connected in order to create gates onto the platform in two locations. And you can see those two locations here. This area right here is the new platform, and this is the existing concrete bridge. Per the applicant, the property owner is proposing to convert the existing building into an event space and would like to create an outdoor terrace seating area at the front of the building. The project proposal expands the bridge area to the west of the current concrete connector to allow for a limited terrace seating area that will serve the building. The seating area will be constructed at the level of the existing bridge, allowing for a flush transition. The structure is planned to be constructed of painted steel beams and handrails, and the finished surface of the terrace will be 6-inch tongue and groove stained Ipe wood decking. The bridge was most recently reconstructed in early 2023 due to damage from a vehicle that struck the supporting column in 2022. The addition is proposed to be compatible with the renovation materials and will be similar to other bridge terrace conditions found along the Bay Street Factors Walk corridor. Most similar to this proposed are the terraces at Vicks on the River and the Cottontail Inn. Both projects have a steel frame structure and a wood terrace surface. In both projects, the steel handrails are also notably different from the historic handrails, which is also part of this current proposal. End quote. The applicant did provide this extensive history. You can see here that the that historically there were wood bridges in the same, roughly the same locations.
here and then through here. It's kind of cut off, but it's right there. The bridges have generally always been in the same configuration that they are now, and the areas proposed to be covered have never been fully covered historically. In 2010, the River Street Vision and Gateway Plan was drafted. Although never formally adopted by the mayor and aldermen, it provides valuable information regarding Factors Walk. The document states that pedestrian bridges allowing public access to upper and middle Factors Walk should be encouraged yet meet ADA requirements. Smaller bridges provide natural light, better visibility, and safer pedestrian experience. Additionally, air is able to filter down to lower Factors Walk, creating a more inviting atmosphere. Any new bridges should be constructed of iron or steel, be well-crafted, and in a design that reflects the utilitarian use of Factors Walk. Newly constructed infrastructure along Factors Walk should also represent historic structures in design and materials. Any fencing should be of iron or youth-compatible contemporary material that is pedestrian scale, but clearly a bridge of the 21st century, well-designed and light in appearance. The historic ballast block wall should be retained and preserved. Attachment to these walls should be minimal and carefully considered by a licensed engineer. No parts of the historic wall should be removed, covered, or obscured. Structural support for a wall system should be from the mainland and adjacent buildings as much as possible, end quote. Staff finds that the document supports what is being proposed. Come on. Bear with me a second. There we go. All right. Regarding the Secretary of the Interior standards, according to the historic research included with the submittal packet, the current railings that are proposed to be altered were likely installed in the 1980s. The proposal does not remove or alter materials, features, or spaces. The original bridge is still delineated by the concrete area. The proposed terrace will clearly be new and not create a false sense of historical development. Staff does not find that the railings proposed to be altered have yet acquired historical significance. The new work is differentiated in that the existing bridge is constructed from concrete. The new terrace is proposed to be wood supported by steel with railings that are of a contemporary cable rail design. The new work is reversible and the essential form and integrity would not be impaired if the terrace is removed in the future. Staff is recommending approval to add a platform to Upper Factors Walk near the property located at 503 East Bay Street as requested because the proposed work is visually compatible and meets the preservation standards. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Leah. Does anybody have any questions for staff?
Yes, I just wanted to verify some of our discussions earlier. In your recommendations, you had some examples of, I think there were two other examples where this is the voids have been filled in. I just want to verify that these were not within the invisible of this site, and that you did not intend for those to be examples of visible compatibility.
No, I don't think you can see them from this site, no.
And you didn't intend for them to be examples justifying visual compatibility.
No, they're just more examples of where this has been done in Factors Walk recently.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for staff? Okay. Thank you, Leah.
Thanks.
Would the petitioner like to come forward? Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Leah. My name is Becky Lynch, and I'm with Lynch Associates Architects, petitioner for the project. Thank you, staff, for your recommendation. We really appreciate your support of our proposal. We would just like to reiterate a few points that this bridge that we are proposing is not obscuring, you know, an active point of Factors Walk down below. It is just a roadway. It's a very narrow area that's just passing through. And it's only shading an area that would be affected by this particular building, which shares the space on Factors Walk as well as the level up on Bay Street. This configuration that we proposed is reversible, and it's clearly defined between old and new. And structurally, it's the simplest diagram that we could come up with. There were other options, you know, that we could push it back more towards the building, but to provide any usable space. We would be attaching to the building, possibly removing more of the railing, and structurally we would have to provide either a beam that attached directly to the building itself or an additional column on Lower Factors Walk. And we would prefer to, you know, impact Lower Factors Walk in the least way possible, although there will be a little bit more cover for this moment in time. In terms of the approvals process, this is a long approvals process for a project like this. And we have first approached real estate services and they told us to come to you first. But whenever you decide what you decide, then we will go on to the many other city agencies for their approvals. And should they recommend or should we have to change anything else, you know, if you did approve a proposal, if they wanted changes, we would definitely be coming back to you for your review and approvals. We're hoping, or the owner is hoping, that this introduction of the space would help introduce activity to this end of River Street, which is very sleepy. There's not a lot going on. We feel that there's really minimal impact to the Bay Street or to any neighboring properties or to Lower Factors Walk. And, you know, we just found this to be the least invasive proposal that we could provide. And I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Lynch. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Lynch?
I just have one, and I asked it during the pre-meeting, but maybe you could qualify it. As far as the size of it goes, is it pretty equivalent to what is at Vicks and Cotton Sale? I know they use those as examples, but would you say size-wise, is it about that size?
I don't have the measurements of those offhand, but I believe it's close to the one at Vicks, yes.
Any additional questions for the petitioner? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Make sure you state your name for the record.
My name is Steve Edwards, and I represent the Downtown Neighborhood Association. We would like to point out, or we would like to oppose the petition and point out that we think the reasons for the opposition are actually stated in the staff report. As they noted, if you look at the Stanford maps, the one precedent that's cited as the major precedent is Vicks. And unlike Vicks, this has never been an area covered by a balcony. Vicks, again, if you look at the Stanford maps, previously was. So it's not a good precedent in addition to being not visually compatible. The other thing that we'd like to refer to is the River Street Vision and Gateway Plan, which is also cited. And point out that it says that smaller bridges provide natural light, better visibility, and safer pedestrian experience. None of that applies here. We think that it's a bad precedent, and of course, there's always the concern that this would be a slippery slope. It's something that a logic that could be applied to a large number of places on Factors Walk, and if we continue to permit that, it's just going to be a tunnel. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is there another member of the public that would like to comment?
Hello, my name is Andrew Jones. I'm chair of the Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. Please reject this proposal because it fundamentally alters the character of our historic Factors Walk. This proposal is for the insertion of a deck alongside one of the area's historic bridges. This deck addition alters the historic character of the bridge in violation of the Department of Interior standards. It's very different from the precedents, so-called precedents, Vicks and Cotton Sale, as people have mentioned, not only because at Vicks there was a pre-existing covered area, but because it completely covers the lower level from the building all the way through to Emmett's Park, which Vicks does not. From the lower level, the view of the sky will be completely blocked. And further, as the MPC report clarified, the other examples had a history of covering part of the lower level, and this project does not have that history. Thus, the proposal before you is precedent setting. This is the first time you're seeing the spaces between the bridges on Factors Walk being filled in. The spidery iron bridges that connect Emmett Park to Factors Walk are a quintessential element of Factors Walk. To fill the space in between them with decks, and obviously there'll be more of these proposals if you approve this one, it fundamentally changes the spatial relationships that define this area. And please remember that Factors Walk is recognized as a character area under Section 7.711 of the ordinance, which specifically mentions the bridges as part of that character. You must deny this proposal because it is not visually compatible with the rhythms and building masses of the adjacent visually related contributing buildings. Section 7.89, the visual compatibility test, includes a consideration in Section E, rhythm of structures on streets, the relationship of a building or structure to open space between it and adjacent buildings or structures shall be visually compatible with the open spaces between contributing buildings and structures to which it is visually related, and the bridges are structures. F, rhythm of entrance and or porch projection, the relationship of entrances, porch projections, and walkways to buildings or structures shall be visually compatible with the contributing buildings and structures to which they are visually related. So the ordinance sets forth the criteria, and this clearly doesn't meet it. The immediately adjacent bridge is in its original form. This proposal violates the historic rhythms of the contributing buildings. Please apply the criteria and deny this project. If you approve, you'll create a precedent that could result in a substantial degradation to the historical integrity of Factors Walk. Thank you.
Well said. Thank you. Any other public comments?
Good afternoon. I am Charles Roberts. I'm one of the partners in HLC Hotels. We own and operate the Old Harbor Inn at 508 East Factors Walk. We are the neighbors for this petitioner, and we support this petition. We think it is visually compatible with the area, and we also think that the development of that area is a necessity. Mm-hmm. We think it is also that it also is in line with the current development that we're seeing on the east end of Factors Walk. We think that it cleans up that end, and it does, as I think someone pointed out before, the sleepy area of Factors Walk is being redeveloped, and we think it is appropriate. And we just would like to say that we support it.
Thank you. Anybody else? Public comment? Virtually?
No, ma'am.
No? Would the petitioner like to respond to the public comments?
Thank you to everyone who spoke on this project. In response to the comments that were in opposition, we would just like to reiterate that this is a very small footprint, and it's clearly differentiated in materials and form. And so I don't think it's fundamentally altering the bridges, the historic bridges as they stand. And should the board have a lot of heartburn over the covering of the roadway, you know, we would be open to considering more of an L-shaped proposal, as I previously referenced, but it would just necessitate a little more structure, and that's why we didn't propose that to begin with. But it is possible to push it away from the roadway if that is the fundamental issue, but I think, as was mentioned in the pre-meeting, in terms of materiality, we're looking to use wood that would be spaced apart, allowing some dappled light down. And also, I think it's worth saying that the fact that staff is recommending approval for this proposal really speaks volumes, because they're very strong preservationists and, you know, usually have a stronger stance historically than the board on these issues.
That's all. Do you mind if I ask you a question?
No.
One of the things that was just brought up was lighting under the interior, because it's going to cover, right? Is there any, I don't recall seeing this in your application, but was there any lighting proposed to be added to the underside to provide lighting at night for that area?
We don't currently show it, but we would be happy to incorporate it.
Okay. Just curious. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
At this time, we'll now enter into board discussion. Mr. Becker, I'll start with you.
Look, and I have significant concerns about this proposal. Let me start off first about the 2010 Gateway document. I think it did a great job talking about what the importance was and what they wanted to preserve within, with these related to the bridges. It spoke specifically about keeping the width of the bridges and the importance of it. And the reason was is to make sure they maintain the open spaces. They enable light to go down Factors Walk. I think that we all agree from this document how much time they spent within the Gateway Project shows that the aesthetic significance of these bridges and how important it is for Factors Walk. As I said before, the open voids in Factors Walk have remained preserved for centuries, except for one example, which is located 9 blocks away. We just talked about that. That is not a criteria to be visually compatible. I think the preservation of this is critical to maintaining the historical integrity of Factors Walk.
Well said. Okay. Ms. Gwynn.
No comments.
Okay. Mr. Higgins.
No comment this round.
Okay. Mr. Thompson.
Well, I see this as a improvement to that area that's sort of second to all the east and west things going on at the moment. But I do like the idea of lighting, yeah, Chairman. So that could be something to be added.
Ms. Taylor.
I'm just trying to differentiate between this project and the prior ones that have been done. Mm-hmm. They talked about this being a precedent setting, but it has been done in the past. I understand that formerly there was a balcony or a covering over Vicks.
Right.
But I'm trying to figure out if there's anything else that that makes this substantially different than what was done previously, because it has been done several times. And I'm also really curious about this, what they're proposing as far as the L shape, as compared to what has been proposed here today. I don't know if we want to get into that as a possibility. Would it help to pull it up again, the drawing?
I think we need to focus on what's being presented in front of us today.
Right, but that's what I mean. Just even pull that up again to try to figure out. Would you mind, Lena, real quick? Just the probably the rendering. Yeah. Okay. That's all my comments for right now.
Okay. I just got a notification that we have a public comment that was trying to comment. So I'll call in Sabrina Nagel. She's virtually, correct?
I have.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Sabrina Nagel. I'm a resident of the Downtown Historic District. Thank you for calling on me. My hand was raised. I'm not sure what happened there. I would like to chime in as a frequenter of that area, as a pedestrian. I disagree with the project because it takes away natural light, and just on the basis of that in itself, I think it would be a mistake. The more of these that we add, the more darkness we add to other areas, and I think that's a grave mistake to make. Even if you add artificial lighting for the nighttime, which, yes, obviously would be amazing, I think not taking away the lighting would be even better. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go back into board discussion now. Second round. Mr. Becker.
Okay. Look, a requirement for approval of a project like this requires a couple of things in the design criteria. The first of one has to be, it has to be visually compatible.
Right.
As we've talked about before, the examples that were given that this has been done is over 9 blocks away. And one of the criterion that it has to be visually compatible, it has to be visually related with the view within the premises of the proposed structure. And in this case, we talked to the staff, it is not. There's mm-hmm. not an example that is close within view. And it also goes on to say that more importance should be placed to the nearer locations. Again, there's nothing. I walked from the 200 block through the 500 block that mm-hmm. this has been done. I also piggyback on some comments that someone talked about the rhythm of structures and streets. Clearly, when you remove this open space, you're changing that rhythm as you look down Factors Walk all the way from the 200 block to the 500 block. You're going to be changing that rhythm of the open space. And again, I think that this is one of the jewels of the preservation of Factors Walk is these bridges. And mm-hmm. once we start changing this, you're changing the architectural look of Factors Walk from Bay Street.
Ms. Quinn.
This is, you know, it's a complicated one because while I don't have an issue with the design, I think that it's the vacant space that is the issue here. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me, I'll echo my colleagues' comments. Factors Walk is a very underappreciated resource in our city and is a great place to see evidence of our past and kind of the foundation of our city. And so this is a hard one for me to support for those reasons.
Mr. Higgins.
I agree with both parties' opinions. I too am finding this one quite difficult. I have no problem with the overall design, but I do have problems with the infill. I think the precedent would set and the effect it has on Factors Walk far outweigh the net very good design. So it's not making it with me.
Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Higgins, what was the last line you just said? It what?
It's not making it with me.
Okay. I really at the point of disagreeing with the staff recommendation at this point to approve this.
Ms. Taylor.
I really don't have any other comments.
Okay. Okay. At this time, we will now, do you have another comment?
I was going to make a motion.
Okay. Well, I am now ready to take a motion, so go ahead.
Okay. I move that the Downtown Savannah Historic Board of Review deny petition 230048-69-COA 504 East Bay Street Factors Walk Addition Alteration.
It's 503. Can you restate that part? Oh, thank you.
Sorry, thank you. Typo. Because it is not visually compatible or visually related to other historic buildings, or it is inconsistent with the rhythm of structures on streets.
Gwen, second.
Pause real fast. It's inconsistent with what?
Rhythm of structures on the street.
Yeah, I'm writing it down too. So you said you were denying it based on, yep, or visually related. Okay. And then Gwen, you want to second that, right?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Ms. Taylor, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
No.
So you're voting to not deny it. Okay. Higgins?
Aye.
Gwen?
Aye.
Becker?
Aye.
Okay. With that, the petition has been denied. The next item on the regular agenda is the petition of Studio MCNG. Hopefully I said that right. Architecture. 23-004875-COA 2-14 East Bryan Street, rehabilitation, alterations, and additions.
Thank you. The applicant is requesting approval for rehabilitation alterations and rooftop additions for the buildings located at 2 and 14 East Bryan Street. They will become a Ritz-Carlton Hotel and Residences. 2 East Bryan Street, which is a contributing building, will be preserved and restored. The scope of work includes replacing the front door with a new front door to match the original, installing new awnings along Bull and Bryan Street that are inspired by a historic photo. The stone facade will be restored and repaired as needed. The existing windows will remain and the frames will be painted black. New openings in the east facade to allow for a connection to 14. Oops, that's the wrong one, I think. No, that's the right one. Mm-hmm.
I'll just talk while it's doing its thing. New openings in the east facade to allow for a connection to 14 East Bryan Street. And you can see those right here. They're going to be probably not visible or very minimally visible above 14 East Bryan Street. And new mechanical equipment on the roof to replace existing equipment. For 14 East Bryan Street, which is a non-contributing building, that's this building here. This is existing and proposed. The applicant, quote, proposes an addition of an 11th and 12th floor of residences with a 12-story height map location along with a limited bonus floor, level 13, to allow for a small kitchen to service a proposed pool deck, end quote. The scope of work also includes the following. That is restaurant outdoor seating, which you can see here. This is existing and proposed of the front, the first two levels, basically. Within the building footprint, but covered by a new terrace above facing Bryan Street. Exterior balcony with metal rail at level two. New metal cladding at the 12th floor addition. New mechanical equipment to be screened, and that's up here. New balcony doors on the north and south facades, along with limited new doorways on the east side. New balconies are proposed along the south side, and Juliet balconies are proposed along the east and north sides. New sconces and lighting fixtures on the facade and the balconies. I'm going to pass around the finish board. I'm going to talk about those finishes in a minute. And lastly, storefronts on floors one and two and windows will be replaced with new insulated glazing with black frames. So 2 East Bryan Street was constructed in 1915 and 14 East Bryan Street was constructed in 1976. So the Secretary of the Interior standards only applies to 2 East Bryan Street. The contributing building is proposed to be restored and all materials preserved. Windows are to be retained and repaired. Stonework is proposed to be restored and a minimum amount of exterior wall materials proposed to be removed to gain access from the historic building into the new building where there isn't already. However, the drawings indicate that the main entrance doors will be YKK aluminum storefront type doors, which is not an appropriate material for a replacement door on a contributing building, and that's here. So we'd be looking for that to be wood doors, which would have been what the material would have been originally on this. So the relationship of materials, texture, and color for the non-contributing building, since the materials on the contributing building are all existing. So all new marble cladding is, I'm going to go back to this drawing here. Any new marble cladding is going to be white marble stone. Metal canopy terrace will be bronze aluminum, and you can see these materials on the board as it goes around. Railings are to be bronze colored metal and glass. The 12th floor addition will be bronze metal cladding. The stair and elevator enclosures on the top of the non-contributing building will be white stucco over CMU. The storefront and storefront doors will be bronze aluminum, and staff finds all of these materials to be visually compatible. For the metal cladding on the 12th story, which again you can see right here, the board may approve alternative materials that are not listed as prohibited upon a showing by the applicant that the material or product is visually compatible with historic materials and has performed satisfactorily in the local climate. The metal cladding, it'll be minimally visible, but it also is a material that performs well in the local climate and is used quite often, and so staff is recommending approval. I had already mentioned that about the historic building and how these doors should be a wood material. That's also a design standard. One other concern is that there's a standard that says that windows facing a street shall be double or triple hung awning or casement, and it doesn't appear that these 11th floor windows here facing Bryan Street are an operable type that are permitted by the ordinance. So staff is recommending that either an operable component be added or that they apply for a special exception to keep them to match the other windows, because what they were doing was matching the other windows on the level below. So either, like I said, seek a special exception or change the design. Ensure that the awnings are 8 feet above public right-of-way, and we need locations for electric meters and refuse storage areas. And let's see, what else? I just wanted to go over the bonus story a bit, too. I know you all haven't seen one in a little while. So additional stories above the height map for non-contributing large-scale development, and that's what we've got going on here. So that's this building here. It excludes the historic building here. So they've chosen the criterion regarding multiple ground floor active uses and masonry materials. So multiple ground floor active uses span the length of the facade on all street fronting elevations and maintain individual primary exterior entrances. So there is a entrance into this residential lobby and then an entrance into the restaurant. So there are individual entrances, and that's from this street facing facade, which is Bryan Street here. For rehabilitations, the active ground floor uses must replace previously inactive uses to qualify, and this building is currently inactive. Lobby shall not occupy more than 30% or 60 linear feet. It occupies 23% and 20 feet. At least 50% of the active use shall be designed so that their primary entrance is only accessed from the exterior. So everything's only accessed from the exterior here. So that is not a problem either. And in addition to the active uses, exterior building walls shall incorporate 100% modular masonry materials on all sides with the use of granite, marble, or other natural quarried stone over a minimum of 30% of street fronting facades. So the bonus story is proposed to be completely clad in white marble. All right, so staff is recommending approval with the following conditions, because the proposed work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. And that's to revise the proposed entrance doors on the contributing building to be wood, to add an operable component to the new windows on the 11th floor facing Bryan Street, or apply for a special exception in order to match the other windows on this facade, which are not operable. 3, the awnings must have a minimum vertical clearance of 8 feet above the sidewalk. 4, the electrical equipment must be on the rear facade and minimally visible from view, illustrate the location on the site plan. And 5, the refuse storage area must be located within the building or to the rear of the building and screened from the public right away and illustrate the location on the site plan. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Leah. Does anybody have any questions for staff? No? Thank you.
Thank you.
Would the petitioner like to come forward? Make sure you state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Jennifer McConney with Studio MCG Architecture. I'm here representing TMGOC in the renovation of this beautiful historic structure. We will be repurposing the Savannah Bank and Trust into a Ritz-Carlton Hotel and Residences.
Could we bring up our presentation? Sorry.
Yeah. Perfect. Thank you. I know you're all very familiar with the site, but the existing buildings sit on Johnson Square on Bull and Bryan Street, and it is the tallest building in downtown Savannah. The Savannah Bank and Trust was designed by Mowbray and Effinger Architects out of New York in 1910. The building exterior remains intact, except for the replacement of the windows over the years and the building's stone cladding needing restoration. The building's entry along Bryan Street is flanked by 2 Corinthian columns and marble cladding. Sadly, the ground floor interior has been privatized into offices, but the exterior remains intact. the building that we call the annex along Bryan Street was built in 1975 and designed by Thomas E. Stanley and Associates out of Hilton Head. The facade was designed in the international style, so it is organized and simple, and it was a nice gesture for that architect to keep the building understated so not to compete with the historic structure. And we plan to do the same. You know, we looked at the potential demolition of this building at the beginning. And, you know, we as historic architects that specialize in this, you know, saw the importance that even though it was built in 1975, as I was, you know, it's still a very important part of Savannah's urban fabric. So, you know, we're providing to the plans to repurpose this office building into a hotel, which isn't exactly an easy feat because it is different, you know, difficult dimensions to work with, but we've made it work. And these are some photos from the construction of the 1975 building. And like I said, our office specializes in historic preservation projects and sensitively adding architecture adjacent to historic buildings. When we started this project, we spent time studying the surrounding buildings, their context, and the sight lines. We basically inventoried and built a computer model of all the buildings in the neighborhood and used that knowledge to prepare our design. We also studied the facades of the existing buildings to understand what the scope of work of the facade will be. We'll need to do a proper restoration. The existing buildings' facades do need work, and the client has hired the appropriate facade consultants to assist us in detailing that scope as a part of the restoration. This is an image of the current ground floor. The ground floor of both structures have been almost completely privatized. As a part of our request to add a small enclosed area on the 13th floor, we're proposing to open up almost the entire ground level street facade perimeter to public uses. Currently, the ground floor consists of all private offices. Right now, actually, the last time I was here, the 1975 building was being used as luggage storage for travelers that dropped their luggage off during the day and could walk around Savannah. So it will be a much a big upgrade from that. This is a before and after of the view of the ground floor of 14 East Bryan. In the center of the proposed image on the right, we are proposing an active restaurant use and outdoor seating under a bronze overhang that also resembles a lobby porte-cochere. We have proposed to use the same marble cladding that's on the historic building to accent the ground floor of the annex, and we are proposing to enhance the two center columns with that same cladding. The ground level entry of the hotel will be located in the same location as the original bank lobby entrance that we are proposing to restore the front door per staff recommendation, so we will make that door a wood door as staff recommends. We also plan to place a bronze plaque on Bull Street describing the history of the building, while the bronze plaques along Bryan Street will provide signage for the building. The proposed ground floor of the site will open up both Bryan Street entries to the public. We are providing active uses with a restaurant, outdoor seating along Bryan Street, and the annex, along with a new separate entry for the residents located on the upper level. These are some images of the floor plans of the upper levels in the basement. What you can see here, they're color-coded to show you. The blue is actually the hotel uses, and the pink is the residential uses. And like we said, we studied the sight lines. This is an image from looking west, and you can see the additions are minimally visible, mostly because the building's already so tall and there's lots of trees and a big park along Johnson Street. And we've also set back the addition so it's even less visible. This is an image of what is the 13th floor. The annex is in a 12-story height limit zoning. And so you can see here the small areas that are highlighted in kind of a beige and blue. That's the addition. The rest is just an open pool deck. These are some images of the upper levels. Again, blue hotel. Pink is the residential. And here's an image from, this is really the only spot you could see this building. So standing in front of that kind of Greek Revival building, you can see the addition there, just a small line of it on the top. And what we're doing is putting the building is 10 stories, but the 11th floor is actually behind that tall parapet, and there's a large mechanical space behind there. So we're opening up that facade, and then behind that, we're placing the addition setback. These are the elevations before and after along Bryan Street. You can see on the first through third floors where we're adding just a little bit of the marble. I mean, it's not going to take up the entire facade. We're just trying to relate the two buildings a little bit more. And then the addition at the 12th floor, you can see in the dark bronze. This is an image from the alley side. So this is really only visible from very far away. That you can see that in the sight line. And because these are residential levels, we need operable windows facing the alley side. So we are proposing to open those up as kind of like interior stacking doors that open towards the inside. And then actually improvise, because the sills are fairly high, so just bringing those sills down. And this is only on the 1975 building, bringing those sills down. On the right, you see the before and afters, which are almost identical for the 2 East Bryan. We love this building. We're not really, you know, we want to see it look exactly like it is, but with a restored facade. And we are proposing some awnings at the ground level that were inspired by some historical images. And the frames at the upper level and the lower level, they're almost like a metal frame. Right now they're a faded green. We're proposing to paint those black, which is what we saw in the historic photos. It's a dark color in the black and white photos, so we're proposing to paint those black to match the rest of the building. And this slide talks about the materials that we had passed around. And another sightline view. So, you know, really the star of the show is the 1910 building, and we want to keep it that way, but we do, you know, need to provide a little bit more street presence for the restaurant at the ground floor for the 1975 building. Some sections here on the right side, you can see the two floors that were added. Again, one of those floors is behind an existing parapet, and the small portion in white, that's our bonus floor. It's really small area. Here's some before and afters of both of the 1910 building. And then our proposed really repurposing that ground floor bank and making it a usable space for the restaurant. And again, we thank you very much. We thank staff for giving us a recommendation for approval. And we are our whole team, developers, architects, engineers, and we're all really excited about this project and being able to get to restore this building. I'm here for any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for the petitioner? Yeah? Okay. Go ahead, Tom.
This probably isn't related to the decision except to ask, how many hotel rooms will there be and how many residential units?
There's approximate numbers. We're looking at 100 to 105 hotel rooms. There are large rooms, and in residences, there's about 20 residences.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was the setback of the addition?
Let's see, it's about 5 feet. In the corners, it's about 5 feet, and then the glass is set back another 5 or so.
Okay. So 5 to 10 feet.
Yeah.
And what is the height of the historic building? Is it like 15 feet or something?
It's 180
stories. I meant stories.
15 stories, yeah. And 170 feet or so. I don't remember. I could look in the drawings, but yeah.
I was very tall. More about the stories, so
yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any additional questions for the petitioner? Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Make sure you state your name for the record.
Yes. My name is Andrew Jones.
In looking at the drawings, I have a concern about the additions that are on the east facade of the original building. Mm-hmm. And they seem to be quite substantial, as you can see here. Keep in mind, I think we all know the views of Savannah. This is the tallest building, and you often see the view from the river of this building with the 75 portion adjacent, which also stands up very high. And now you've got a lot of additions on that facade. So this is going to fundamentally change the Savannah skyline. And I think there should be perhaps some more focus on what's going on in this area and what its appearance will be. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else?
Good afternoon again. My name is Ryan Darles, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. I'll just start by stating that the petitioners have met with us several times and have involved us throughout their design process. Regarding the contributing historic building, I think a lot of us would ask for a long time who in their right mind would come up with the amount of money and time to rehabilitate a building of this size and with such substantial design details. So we thank them for existing and being able to do that. We are very excited to see someone willing to spend that amount of money and time and ensure the viability of this beautiful historic building. Although we're seeing the loss of much needed office spaces, we're seeing the rehabilitation of a building that doesn't necessarily need it, but could definitely deal with it. Regarding the non-contributing building, our architectural review committee did meet this past Monday and unanimously agreed amongst themselves that they find the improvements proposed not only appropriate, but they find them to be highly favorable, specifically with the activation of the ground level. On the upper levels, we do see something that we've not seen on Johnson Square in recent history nor in distant history, and that's the bringing back of residences on a square that is currently fully commercial and has not been residences for a very, 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 very long time. So we're hearkening back to a time that none of us have ever seen. Overall, we do find this project appropriate. We agree with staff's recommendations, and we're excited to see its movement forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional public comments?
Yeah. We do have Sabrina Nagel.
Okay. Sabrina.
Hi, I just want to say I to chime in with the addition of residences. Yes, downtown is sad to see to lose office space. We're excited that it is a properly done rehabilitation, so that's great. The project looks fantastic. I had a question on the palmettos on the side where on the Bolt Street side of the building. On some of your renderings, they disappeared. I think those are pretty iconic because they frame sort of the City Hall view. So I know that's a pretty small detail, but I think it's important just because that is such an important view along the corridor north. So I just want to chime in and hope that they will stay for the sake of what, you know, that the framing of City Hall, which I think they're also on the other side of the street. Otherwise, I want to say I love the awnings in the bottom. I think that is bringing back a nice element of the way it used to be. And I, as a resident in the historic district, and my husband works in a nearby building, I just want to say we're excited to see something classy and something well done and a nice rehabilitation happen there. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Would you like to respond to the public comments?
Yes. In response to the palms, we were not removing those. Those are staying, and they did disappear. Sorry about that off the renderings, but they're staying. We realize they flank all of Bull Street, so we would never get rid of those. Yeah.
Did you have any other comments?
I don't know if she did. She have any other
or any other public comments?
No, I don't.
Thank you. Okay. At this time, we will now enter into board discussion. Ms. Taylor, I will start with you.
I agree that I think the design is. It's a good design on the addition. I mean, on the annex. I typically am not in favor of anything that adds additional height to anything in the landmark district. I like the fact that this is at least stepped back somewhat, and the design of it is fairly, it helps to obscure the height, and being next to a 15 floor building. Obviously, it's not going to be as noticeable as something that's standing out by itself. Other than that, I agree with staff's comments, and very happy to hear about the restoration of the historic building itself.
Okay, Mr. Thompson.
I have, you know, similar comments in support of the project and agree with staff recommendations. Just a comment also about the residential part of it. It's nice to see that kind of mix in a place like this. Not that any of us could ever afford them, but.
Mr. Higgins.
Nothing other than echoing the two previous comments.
Okay. I don't normally comment, but I'm going to comment today. I am also excited to see this happen in the mixed use of residential and hotel together, plus with the restaurant. I think that I'm also not a person that usually is in favor of yet another hotel or a bonus story or something like that, but I feel like in this instance, it's completely appropriate. And I think that the treatment that you did to the 1975 building is beautiful and well done. And I'm excited to see this happen. Ms. Quinn.
I'm excited to hear your comments today. You know, I too am in support of this project. I think you guys have done a wonderful job recognizing the difference between the two structures and allowing the 1910 structure to shine. Mm-hmm. You know, this is Savannians call this the Savannah skyscraper. So it's very iconic to our city. And of course, being on the Bull Street corridor adds to its significance, which along with that comes great responsibility. And so we appreciate the time and care that you put into this restoration project.
Mr. Becker.
I have no additional comments.
Okay. We'll go around one more time just to make sure. Ms. Taylor.
Nothing else.
Mr. Thompson.
I just continued to be happy that people are willing to invest in our community the way they do in the area. Thank you.
Mr. Higgins.
No comment.
I just realized that I forgot that I had a comment/question. One of the things that I wanted to comment on was the awnings that are being added back. Love that you're doing that. The only thing that I was going to ask or remind the board to consider as part of their motion is we didn't see like a section of how those are going to be installed into those metal panels. So just want to make sure that that's done sensitively to not destroy the metal panels or harm them in any way. That's my only constructive, I guess, feedback. Ms. Quinn.
Nothing further.
And Mr. Becker.
Nothing further.
Okay. At this time, we'll now entertain a motion. Can we bring up staff's recommendation, please?
Thank you, ma'am.
Sorry. Ms. Gwynn, I move that we approve the petition file number 23-004875 COA, address 2-14 East Bryan Street, with the staff recommendations and an added condition to provide further detail on how awnings will be attached to a historic facade.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Higgins, second.
Okay. Mr. Becker, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Quinn?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Taylor?
Aye.
Or Ms. Taylor, I'm so sorry. With that, the petition has been approved with conditions, adding condition number 6. Last item on the regular agenda is petition of Sotil and Sotil, 23-004876-COA, 202 East Gwinnett Street, new construction, small, part 1, addition and variance recommendation request.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to pass the model. Oh,
The applicant is requesting approval for new construction small part one for a two-story carriage house and for a rear porch addition for the main building for the property located at 202 East Gwinnett Street. The carriage house will be constructed using the existing one-story garage structure. The second floor will be added above. Three vehicular gates will be added along the lane where a section of the masonry fence is currently missing. That's right here. A variance recommendation to the Zoning Board of Appeals is requested from the standard that reads, the building footprint of the accessory dwelling unit shall not exceed 700 square feet in order to allow the footprint to be 760 square feet, which is the existing footprint of the garage. On August 12, 2020, the HGBR issued a COA for alterations to this property, and this work is under construction. You can tell that in the photos that the work is still going on. The historic main building was constructed in 1882 and is a contributing structure. The large rear porch was constructed during alterations to the building in 1895, and by 1916, the rear porch had been enclosed with wood siding. Now altered again under the current COA issued in 2020, the rear facade has a regular rhythm of large openings with columns between to read as an enclosed porch. The existing garage structure does not appear on the Sanborn maps and does not appear on the historic buildings map. Staff estimates, based on the architectural design, that it was constructed in the 1990s to the 2000s, possibly even since the last time the map was updated in 2011. A 1994 COA shows that area only as a concrete slab. Regarding the variance recommendation request and the variance criteria and the criterion for general consistency, per the applicant, the requested variance retains the footprint of the existing accessory structure and thereby retains the percentage of lot coverage below the 40% maximum allowed by the ordinance. When they say lot coverage, I think that they meant the footprint maximum there. Special conditions. Per the applicant, a special condition is resultant from the footprint of the existing building. In order to reduce the square footage of the second floor unit to 700 square feet, a visually inappropriate setback or terrace would be required. The special conditions are the result of the pre-existing garage footprint and do not result from the actions of the applicant. The special conditions are not financial. A literal interpretation. Per the applicant, literal interpretation would deprive the owner of the rights enjoyed by other properties within the same zoning district and along the same lane, several of which have similarly sized and visually appropriate two-story carriage houses. The minimum variance. Per the applicant, the variance if granted would mean that the carriage house would only be 60 square feet over the 700 square feet limit as outlined in the ordinance. This minimal variance would allow the current structure's existing footprint to be continued to the second level and would allow for the most appropriate visually compatible design. All right, regarding the Secretary of the Interior standards. Which was only applied to the porch addition since that's the only portion that is attached to the historic building. Staff requests additional information regarding the connection of the new porch addition to the historic building and if it will require removal of or damage to any historic materials and to ensure that it's reversible. We just don't have any details of how and where on the historic building it's going to be attached. You can see the detail there and then the edge detail of it there. Regarding design standards. We need more information about the depth of the balconies just to ensure that they're not over 3 feet deep. They weren't dimensioned here. The eaves and rakes, well, there's no rakes on a hip roof, but the eaves on the accessory building shall overhang at least 8 inches. If they could provide that information was part two, that would be helpful. Accessory structures, this is sort of the big one. Roofs shall be side gable, hip with a parapet, flat, or shed hidden by a parapet, and they're proposing a hip roof. So obviously that standard isn't met. It's a hip without a parapet. Staff is recommending that applicant revise the design to meet the standard or apply for a special exception from the standard. This is a transitional area. This is right
on the north side of the end of the district, so basically the Victorian district. So it's a transitional area, and there's a lot of like Victorian era architecture. So it's not necessarily inappropriate that a carriage house have a hip roof in this area. So it may be possible for them to you know, get support for a special exception here. So we're recommending approval for new construction small part one with the following conditions to be submitted to the board for review with part two because the proposed work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. One, provide additional information regarding the connection of the new porch addition to the historic building and if it will require removal of or damage to any historic materials and that it is reversible. Two, provide the depth of the balconies on the carriage house. They must be a maximum of 3 feet deep. Three, eaves on the carriage house must overhang a minimum of 8 inches. Four, apply for a special exception to the roof shape on the carriage house or revise the roof shape. Recommend approval for a variance recommendation to the Zoning Board of Appeals from the standard that reads that the building footprint of the accessory dwelling unit shall not exceed 700 square feet. In order to allow the footprint to be 760 square feet, which is the existing footprint of the garage because the variance criteria are met. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Leanne. Does anybody have any questions? No? Thank you.
Thanks.
Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon. My name is Christian Sotil. I'm the petitioner for the project. Just want to thank you all for your time this afternoon. Thanks, staff, for their review of the project. And I don't have much to add to that. We agree with the staff recommendations, providing additional information regarding the connection of the new porch addition is certainly something we can bring back during the part two approval process. I will say that all the connections there will be made to new material and not to historic material, but we'll provide those details. The second condition, providing depth of the balconies, a maximum of 3 feet deep, we certainly can comply with that and we'll confirm that during part two. The eaves on the carriage house at a minimum of 8 inches, we'll provide that information. They'll actually be 1 foot, 8 inches. Applying for a special exception for the roof shape on the carriage house, we would do that. We would bring that back during the part two. In fact, we would have brought it initially had we realized that that was a prohibited roof form, which is sort of curious to me because there's many, many precedents for that. I think that may be a typo in the ordinance, but nevertheless, we will ask for that exception. We do think that is the best shape for the roof in this case. And we also appreciate staff's recommendation for approval on the variance recommendation for the small amount of additional square footage so that we can work with the existing footprint. So I'm happy to answer any questions you all may have.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions or any questions for Mr. Sotil? No. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Make sure you say your name.
Okay, my name is Jim Hunt-Schrucker. I am a resident next door. I've lived at 208 East Gwinnett Street since 1995, so I'm very familiar with this house and the recent history. As you see, the over picture is probably, the front picture is probably from 1905. I don't think it shows a carriage house in the back at that time. And the back picture shows the house without a side porch in the yard. There is an awning on my house. I'd like to point out at the back of the house, it does have round columns on the parlor floor. And one thing that's been removed from the house since July of last year when the property was purchased by the current owner is the staircase on the ground floor going up. And you see the nice airiness of the porch when it was, these pictures are probably from the early 90s when the Smiths owned the house. Now, These are two houses. Oh, the house was probably built. It was the first house on the block. So it was built in the 1870s, sometime in the late 1870s. It was a mirror of the house that was behind it, which is the laundromat now. That house was torn down in the 70s also. But this is an example of what the carriage houses would have looked at that time period of the house. This is the site plan that was given. We have concerns about, there's a pool and no indication of a wall. There's a wall maybe in the, it says new wall in the front of the house, but, that looks like it's just a east-west wall and another wall towards the back at the end of the pool. And there's no indication of any changing of the fence, or right now there's a chain link fence between the properties. So I'm curious what the plan might be for that. Also, it's a pool. So there was a pool where they're planning to put parking in the back. And that was always an issue with people getting into the yard and upsetting the owners of the house, the Smiths. So I am concerned about the gate also on the lane. Let me see if I can. Yeah. Okay. So the gate on the lane, which is in the upper left-hand corner, it is pivoting off of the side of the property line, and the current gate pivots off of the carriage house. So I'm a little concerned about that. That kind of shows you the intersection. So the fence has rotted down since the carriage house was built, probably in the early, I want to say it was around 2004 that they put the carriage house back there. Before it was just a slab, as stated earlier, a smaller slab than the current footprint of the carriage house. We would like to know about our side of the carriage house. Is we need to be able to access it to do maintenance, and the current owners are very nice, and they've been very compatible with doing things, but there are some issues that we'd like to address on that side of the carriage house during these changes. I am concerned also about the downspout, because currently the water just drops straight down on that side of the house, and there's no direction of the water moving away, and we're concerned about the welfare of our carriage house. And I'm curious about where the tenant of the carriage house will park. The entrance on the shared border just seems oddly placed, especially they do have refuse there. But I don't think that gate is going to be the main entrance in and out of the property. And this is the site map from the previous plans. The house was sold in 2019 by the Smiths to the previous owners before JK and Mr. Brenneman bought the property. So these are their site plans, which does indicate, you'll see in the lower right hand corner, of a brick fence between the property. There's an elevation from that time period. So I'm curious what the applicant is planning to do with the other details of the house. And
I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up your comments.
I think that's it.
Okay. I already gave you extra time, so I wanted to make sure you got everything out.
Well, there is one thing I'd like to point out, though. How do I get to the...
It would be on the browser, yeah.
Oops.
So the internet browser.
Internet browser, thank you. I'm trying to get to their set of documents. Yeah, I've already pointed it out. Thank you. I'd like to point out that the pictures of the back of the house, how do I maximize that? That these were done early on. They've been in and out of the house during work,
for a while now, but these, the detail in the back, that those columns are rounded in that picture. Mm-hmm. They're rounded from the previous, mm-hmm. the previous owner knocked. It was wonderful hearing this. They pushed the window panes out and they shattered on the ground that were there before. There were just large window panes and they put the windows in. But, they kept the columns, the mm-hmm. round columns. Since the new owner, they've basically taken those columns out and they've squared them up. So now they're square columns in that place. Now, the other thing that they changed was the ground floor on the garden side. The applicant before, they put French doors with side lights, mm-hmm. and they've removed the side lights on that. So, I mean, I can see both of them being approved. I just wanted to point out that my comments back in August the 9th, which I did send Leah an email about, and she responded on the 10th, kindly. She says you'd be looking into all that.
Okay.
And, but otherwise, that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other public comments?
I'm just trying to get the rendition of the structure. Leah, could you pull up the image of the building?
Good afternoon. My name is Andrew Jones. I'm chair of the Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. And in our view, this proposal is too elaborate for a carriage house. The proposed design includes an elaborate cornice that matches that of the main building, featuring a series of Italianate corbels. Such a design is not visually compatible with other carriage houses, which typically feature cornices that are extremely simple and plainer than those of the main structure, not the same as the main structure. And in fact, in Jim's presentation, you saw some very, very simple carriage houses. Adding a formal decorative cornice to a carriage house gives a false sense of history. More importantly, it alters the utilitarian character of lanes. In addition, the window sills and lintels also imitate the decorative Victorian ones of the main building. And as such, they are also not appropriate for a carriage house. The ordinance protects the character of the lane. Section 7810 of the ordinance protects streets and lanes, as the National Park Service explained in its 2022 letter. And as we concur, the streets and lanes provision protects more than just the pavement, protects the discernibility of the lanes, and copying the features of the principal front structure onto the rear carriage house alters that distinction between the street and the lane. So, please either reject this proposal or condition any approval on the following, that the cornice must be simplified and that the window sills and lintels must be simplified. Additionally, we support the MPC's determination that the roof design does not meet the 7810 design standards, which are mandatory, and that a special exception would be appropriate. Next step, I did notice just now that the path between the carriage house and the adjacent property is less than 5 feet. 5 feet, again, is a design standard requirement. Therefore, they would also need a special exception for 5 foot. And lastly, we would note that this project is the subject of a violation that appears later in your hearing materials. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Hello again. Ryan Charles, Director of Preservation with Historic Savannah Foundation. Our Architectural Review Committee met this past Monday, as I previously mentioned, and came to the consensus that they agree with staff's recommendations. Regarding the roof style, as Mr. Sotil had mentioned previously, this is a common roof style within the downtown district and even is seen at very prominent locations like the Carriage House to St. John's Basilica. It's a very similar roof style. You also see it like the 400 block, 500 block of East Waldburg, very close to this location. So that's all we have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other public comments virtually?
No, ma'am.
No? Okay. Would the petitioner like to respond to public comments?
Yes. Hello, Christian Sotil again.
appreciate the public comments, and really I can say, you know, we can certainly learn some things today, and I from the neighbor that we can certainly, I think, address. This is an end block condition facing Abercorn Street. So we do believe that, you know, some degree of decorum for the design is appropriate, is certainly well precedented. And I had some photos that I sent along, if y'all wanted to see them, of other properties throughout the district where the carriage houses and the main houses are united architecturally. We think that's a good idea. This is a area that has a lot of discordance. There's a lot of architecture about that is sort of speaking different languages, and we felt it would be a sort of a repair to this block to create a carriage house that looks like it belongs with the main house. There are details for us to work through, certainly, as we go into part two, and we will do that. Some of the questions that came up about the wall, we're happy to address those during part two. We are proposing a new brick wall in the front garden that's shown in that site plan. We'll provide those details during part two, as well as talk with the neighbor about the best treatment for the side yard condition that's there, and certainly ensure that any construction is structurally independent and is, you know, considerate of their needs, and certainly their needs to access the side of their property, which is, I think, on the zero lot line. We certainly can apply for a special exception for the 5-foot requirement if that's deemed necessary. Of course, it's an existing condition that's there. But just please let us know, and we're happy to respond. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay. At this time, we'll now enter into board discussion. Ms. Taylor, I will start with you.
I agree with staff's recommendations on this. I think the carriage house is probably maybe a little bit elaborately designed, but I don't think it provides a false sense of history. I don't think you could ever confuse this building with being historical as a total project. And I think as long as the other issues are going to be brought up in the next phase, the fencing and some of the other details, the roof, that type of thing, I think those are going to be some of the important elements. I also agree with the variance. I think they meet the variance requirements as well. Okay. Minimum footage.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson?
I, too, agree with staff recommendations and the applicant's willingness to work before they do design part two to resolve any issues and with the neighbors.
Hey, Leah, do you mind bringing up the recommendations for me? Mr. Higgins?
I also agree with staff recommendations. I think the hip roof would be very appropriate, so I would support a special exception on that. As I do about the 760 square foot variance recommendation, I do think it's pushing the envelope a little bit on decorative elements and approaching a false sense of history. I wouldn't mind if that was toned down a little bit, but overall I agree with staff comments.
Ms. Quinn?
No comments.
Mr. Becker?
I think this is a good project in principle, and I'm happy that you're going to work with the adjoining property owner for some of his concerns in phase two. I also will concur that I think that this is a little bit elaborate for a carriage house, but for phase one, I support the staff's comments.
I'm going to comment. So I think that like as far as the overall design, I agree with the fact that it's with the variance as far as building on top of what's already there in its original placement. I do think that some of the details are might be a little bit too elaborate, but my only concern about the details really is just the balconies, like the appropriateness of the balconies on a carriage house. Otherwise, I agree with the details more so matching the main house because of the fact of its location. We'll go around a second time. Ms. Taylor?
Nothing else.
Mr. Thompson? Okay. Ms. Higgins? Or Mr. Higgins? Gosh, sorry. I'm doing that to everybody today.
Ms. Glenn?
No comment.
Mr. Becker?
Nothing else.
Okay. At this time, we will now entertain a motion.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Board. The motion is to accept the staff recommendation for number 23-004876 COA for 202 East Gwinnett Street, part one, including the staff recommendations as stated.
And?
Oh, and thank you. And the recommend approval for the variance, for a variance recommendation to the Zoning Board of Appeals to allow for the footprint of the dwelling unit to exceed to 760 square feet versus 700 square feet.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Mr. Becker, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Gwynn?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
And Ms. Taylor?
Aye.
Okay. With that, the petition has been approved with staff conditions, and the variance recommendation has also been approved. Okay. A list of staff reviews has been attached to the agenda. I bear with me as I read through all of them. The petition of signed e-sign 23-004894-COA 301 Habersham Street, projecting sign. The petition of Lynch Architects 23-004868-COA 132 East Broughton Street, mechanical equipment. The petition of Littles on Liberty 23-004684-COA 129 East Liberty Street, non-illuminated lettered wall sign. The petition of Zach Belger 23-004938-COA 513 East Jones Street, roof replacement. Petition of Robin Restoration 23-004688-COA 220 East Liberty Street, stucco replacement. The petition of Stephen Bodek 23-004680-COA 520 Howard Street, brick repointing and trim repair. The petition of Stephen Bodek 23-004679-COA 206 East Taylor Street, woodwork repair. The petition of Coastal Canvas 23-004672-COA 424 West Broughton Street, recover existing awnings. The petition of Peter Thompson, 23-004658-COA 535-537 East Hare Street, repair damage siting. The petition of Doug Bean Signs 23-004675-COA 412 Williamson Street, mercantile, externally illuminated projecting wall sign on front facade. The petition of Doug Bean Signs 23-004675-COA 412 Williamson Street, wine time, externally illuminated projecting wall sign on front facade. The petition of Eduardo Riveros 23-004677-COA 408 Bull Street, recover toe awnings. The petition of Fast Signs 23-004681-COA 311 West Broughton Street, installation of non-illuminated projecting sign. The petition of William Campbell 23-004841-COA 204 East Liberty Street, replace two fence gates. The petition of Roof Hunters 23-004291-COA, that was repeated twice, I don't know why, 110 West Gordon Street, 110 roof replacement. And lastly, the petition of Daniel Leathers, 23-003179-COA, 1120 Barnard Street, stucco repair and window replacement. If everybody could vote for acknowledgement, please say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed for any reason? Okay. Work performed without a certificate of appropriateness in October. There was four. There's also reports about items deferred to staff. Inspections for October, and then stamped drawings for October that you can review. That's okay. Other business.
I have something that I want to say.
Okay.
I just wanted to thank staff for such a great, complete job with your historical research this month. I thought you guys did a great job with that. Just providing all the sand barns, they were labeled. You got into the history. I could tell you worked at it, and it was so appropriate and so helpful when we were going through these applications. So I appreciate it. Especially with just two of you doing it.
The other thing to talk about other business is, I guess we need to appoint a committee, right? for who's going to do the next vote for next chair and vice chair. So we think, do we need to create a committee today, or do we need to like think about creating a committee?
That's a good point. It is October already, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Because when are you done?
Ooh.
And this is your second year?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yep. Either December or January. I can't remember. I think it's December. I think December is my last meeting, actually. I need to double check.
Okay.
Can you double check for me? Okay. It's definitely my second term.
So yeah, I guess you have to nominate a nominating committee.
Right.
Appoint a nominating committee.
It's December? Okay. So the new person would take over in January?
Yeah.
Start the new year fresh. So do we need to do a committee today, right?
You can do one today, yep.
Okay. So who wants to be on the committee to figure out the next chair and vice chair? Yeah, I was going to say, can we nominate the people that aren't here?
When
you don't come to a meeting.
I think I'm completely done in December, so probably I could be on the committee that way.
Okay. You're like, I can help pick. Right. Okay. So I've got Nan. Who else? You'll do it? Okay. Tom. And we need a third, right? Usually there's three.
Yep.
Should we ask the people that didn't come today? No, you need a third. You have to have three people. Mr. Becker? Okay. Okie dokie. So make sure.
Yeah, so the three of you will basically get together any way you want to.
Yep. And put together nominations for both chair and vice chair.
Right.
Make sure you ask them before you nominate them. Don't spring it on them like some people.
To present it. In November?
Meeting.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep.
And then does anybody else have anything else they want to discuss? No? Do you want me to discuss yours? Or do you want to wait until next month?
I am leaving the MPC. So yeah. I am taking some time for myself. I'm gonna spend some time with
much
my
needed,
family.
Much deserved. Yeah.
Spend some time with my family and get started looking for something new next year. So yep. Something different.
Yeah. So you'll be with us for our next month's meeting.
Yep.
And then.
Yep. My last day is November 15th.
I don't know. That's a good question. Is there a plan to replace you?
Yes.
You're going to replace her? Oh, I was like, what? Okay.
We have hired somebody. She'll start on November 6th. Her name's Kelly Mitchell. Actually, you probably know her.
She's taking your position or she's just going to be a planner?
No, she's a new planner.
Okay. Gotcha. She'll at least be another planner to help Caitlin so she's not by herself.
Yep.
Okay. Okie dokie. And unless there's anything else, the next pre-meeting is Wednesday, November 8th here, obviously in this room at noon. And then the regular meeting starts at 1. Okay. Anybody have anything else? Okay. We will adjourn.